If you are a subscriber to the Level Paths podcast, or if you minister in any capacity in the Appalachian region, you don't want to miss the Appalachian Ministry Conference at Tri-State Bible College, April 22nd and 23rd. This year's conference is a two-day event. The pre-conference starts on Monday, April 22nd at 6 p.m. with Dr. Andrea Clements and Tanner Clements from Uplift Appalachia. The evening will focus on equipping churches and faith-based organizations to serve as the tip of the spear, bringing solutions to the addiction and mental health challenges in Appalachia. Then, on Tuesday, April 23rd, author, church planter, pastor, and keynote speaker Dave Early kicks off day two of the conference, along with storyteller Tommy Reed, special sessions with Dr. Kevin Yingling, and music from Chosen Road. You can also choose from 16 breakout sessions that cover topics like church planting, engaging the next generation, leading the church from the pulpit, ministering with the Bible as your playbook, measuring leadership success with a plan, and much more. For more information and to register for the Appalachian Ministry Conference at Tri-State Bible College, April 22nd and 23rd, visit tsbc.edu.
If we were going to plant another church, what are some specific things that we think that we could give them that would help them to better understand what do we even mean when we say gospel-centered? You know, what does healthy church even mean? If we were so strategic with this and we made it an initiative that we were going to pour into future church planters and their core team, what might we do with that? And then that turned into the organization that we're calling PAC, Planting Appalachian Churches.
From Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute, this is the Level Paths Podcast. We're glad you've taken some time to join us. My name is Chris Weigel. When the COVID-19 pandemic hit the U.S. in full force in March of 2020, it caused well-established churches to struggle to keep their ministries afloat. Sadly, many churches shut their doors permanently. But imagine for a moment that you were just months into the launch of a church plant when the pandemic hit. A fledgling ministry would be a prime candidate for failure. On this Level Paths podcast, Pastor Jerry Williams was involved in a young church plant in Tennessee when March 2020 rolled around. But his church plant survived, and then it continued to thrive. How did that happen? Here's Rex.
Welcome to the Level Paths podcast. This is an exciting conversation that we're having.
Yeah, Rex, this is almost, I'm thinking we're going to need to give a whole new category for our podcast. We're going to call this the Overtime Podcast because Andy Clements, who we interviewed, is going to be speaking at our Appalachian Ministry Conference coming up. She said, hey, you've got to meet my pastor. He leads a group called Planting Appalachian Churches. Jerry, if you would just very briefly tell us a little bit about yourself.
A short intro, you know, would be when I was in my early 20s, I thought the Lord was calling me to pastor, Bible college, did all those things. And then I ended up leading a classical Christian school for 23 years. So I thought I missed the call. And that's maybe what it was that I was supposed to be doing. Late into that, about 21 years in, I realized that something was going on and I took a sabbatical. And it was while I was at that sabbatical that I realized that the Lord was calling me away from this school that I thought I was going to retire from. And I was already ordained as an elder and I was a community life pastor. And then just this kind of idea of planting Appalachian churches, you know, started getting, you know, in our head. And we started, you know, thinking and praying about that. And we were planting a church in Elizabethton, Tennessee, which is an adjacent town. And I was heavily involved. We were developing SMART goals and we were trying to, you know, prepare this group. And, you know, they had a team, they had a region, we had everything. They didn't really have a leader. And we were really praying that the Lord would raise up someone to be the leader, not even having any idea that that was going to be me. I ended up getting prostate cancer and I had to undergo radical prostatectomy. And I came out of the surgery and I'm at home recovering, you know, and I don't know how to describe, you know, when you hear from the Lord, but I was like, oh, it's me. I'm the guy. And I recognized that. And over a series of, you know, a couple months after some vetting, you know, I ended up stepping in as the leader. We planted Redstone Church Elizabethan in January before COVID hit. There were so many churches that did that, that had to close their doors. And we grew through the process and we came out stronger on the other side. But then we began asking, like, why is it that we're healthy? What are we doing? what can we replicate here? And is this something maybe that we can think through on a more regional level and really make an effort to be a church planting church that's about planting healthy gospel-centered churches in Appalachia, which is not easy to do. So that's how we started.
Planting churches in Appalachia is different. It's almost like missiology. We have to think about Appalachia as we would in some of the mission curriculum that I've had in seminary or Bible college. As you go into another culture, into another context, you've got to really understand the culture before you can do any ministry. We've also talked about the natives need to reach the natives. These are things that as we're digging in as the Appalachian Ministry Institute, we're realizing this is mission work.
Yeah.
So what makes Appalachia different? What's the context?
I think there's a lot of variables to that, and it's probably going to look different in each region, but I'll use like a geographical context. Even if you look at Tennessee, it's all Appalachia. But within the context of Tennessee, you've almost got this hierarchy, like the people in Nashville kind of look down on the people in Knoxville, the people in Knoxville look down on the Tri-Cities, and even within the Tri-Cities, you've got Johnson City, Kingsport, Bristol, but then you've got, ooh, Elizabethan, but who wants to go to Elizabethan? Nothing good comes out of Elizabethan, but then if they find out that you're from Elizabethan, they're like, oh, well, at least you're on the west side of Elizabethan and not on the east side. But within each one of those pockets, there's a culture that's just very distinct. And, you know, Appalachia itself, you know, it's hard to describe, but these people have moral character. They come from a lot of times these dysfunctional families. There's this understanding of there is a God. It's not that you have to convince me that there's a God, but being able to sit down with someone in Appalachia and talk about stuff that's stirring in their heart, you know, struggles from their past, and being able to talk about sin and the gospel, it's hard. And they can sift right through when they feel that they're like a pet project of some sort, you know, or when a church tries to come into the area and they put up banners and they do all these things to market themselves. And they'll come in because it's a novel new thing to go take in and eat popcorn and enjoy the ride. But that's not what they need. What we're saying is planting within Appalachia is hard because Appalachian people can be hard to get to. There's so many layers to them. I don't know why that is. I mean, there's a lot of books that have been written about it, and we can talk about that all day. When we began to plant, I kept on saying, listen, we're going into a region that has not had a successful church plant in over 39 years. And if you go back and if you look at why, this is my theory was that they were trying to do that. They were just trying to come in, you know, kind of market themselves, market the church, and, you know, bring in a dynamic preacher and, you know, do what you can do to connect with people. And I'm not saying that there's anything wrong with that, but it's not what's best for Appalachia. So our strategy, I borrowed from Colossians 4:2, remain steadfast in prayer and watchful in it with thanksgiving. And I remember when that verse began to just make some missional sense to me, if you will. So I would say, okay, here's 3 to 5 people in my life right now that are not walking with the Lord or that do not know the Lord. Okay, how about if I just do this? How about if I write down their name and every day I pray for them and I pray that God would work in their hearts, you know, even before I even have a chance to have a conversation with them. And then the next part of that would be, would I be bold enough to reach out to them and to sit down and have coffee with them, have lunch with them or whatever, and not force anything, but just, I've been praying for you. I already believe that the Lord's gone before me. And then see if he opens up the door in a conversation. And if he does, will I be willing to step into that? And that's what I did. And that's what everybody in our core group did. And those were the people that ended up coming into our church. And the first year we had 13 people that were baptized. It was phenomenal. The church was growing, not because we were marketing ourselves or the church. We were just talking gospel. We were listening to people, meeting them where they were at, and then we were just being bold enough to say, hey, listen, this is why I believe in the gospel, because here's the truth that I have for you. And people were willing to listen because we invested time in them.
You planted a church through evangelism. The reason that I point that out is because often churches are planted through disaffected church members from other churches who come together.
Right.
One of the most difficult elements of Appalachian folk is it's really this post-Christian. It's one generation out of being a Christian, but Christianized, if you will. Dean and Sarah wrote a book, The Unsaved Christian, Reaching Cultural Christianity with the Gospel. If I were to describe Appalachia, it would be the generation after that. Mm. So what Dean speaks about is it's difficult to reach people in cultural Christianity, the Bible Belt, because they have been so impacted by cultural Christianity, church stuff. Yeah. But Appalachia is kind of the generation after that. Appalachia is not the Bible Belt. It is a place that had been evangelized. Mm-hmm. The Christian language is spoken, but it's meaningless and has much in common with kind of New Age mysticism and not so much with the gospel. You said something that I found really interesting, that really what kind of sparked us to say, hey, we just need to record this. And that was your approach at multiplying church plants. So you're taking a distinct Appalachian approach, mm-hmm. and really taking that DNA and implanting that in the next generation. How are those new church planters selected, and how do you invest in them? What is it that you do to invest in them?
That first part, you know, how do you determine, you know, who the next church planter is? I mean, that's just a matter of, I think, us as elders, you know, praying, keeping our eyes open. We did some leadership development in our church. We had all of the guys in our church basically color-coded. We had spent enough time with them that if they were red, we didn't even think that they knew the Lord. If they were orange, they were a baby Christian. If they were yellow, you know, so there was like this, there was like a system. But if we had somebody that was dark green, these guys might be elder qualified. So we took those dark green guys and we put them through some training, and we would just get together every 2 weeks, and it was pretty intensive. And at the end of that, we were able to sit down with each one of them and just kind of speak into their lives. So here's what we see, you know, in you, and watch, you know, what the Lord did. But there was one guy in particular, and we just said, man, he looks like he's got the hand of God on him. Why don't we bring this guy in as an intern and see what that might look like? So in his case, we didn't know for certain that he would be ready to step into it. But there was enough evidence there that he sure looked like a guy that we should apply Ephesians 4 and equip this saint for the works of ministry. So we did. You know, so I don't know necessarily that you always know, but I am a big fan of, don't be afraid to do something. Mm. You know, so how about if we bring him in as an intern and just see? You know, so that's how we started with that. Then the way that we would equip and pour in, you know, to him, I think it would look different with every church. But with me, it was, what churches do I see that are healthy gospel-centered churches in our area? What pastors do I see that really have a skill set that could really help him? And these are guys I've already got relationships with. So I just kind of reached out to all of them collectively and said, hey, here's what we're doing. Here's a guy. We're seeing some things in him. Would you be interested and willing to invest in his life? So we're doing kind of 2 years worth of ongoing training, and I'm just pulling from some of these other pastors as a part of that. We haven't even talked about PAC yet, but then there's this other component of PAC where he's actually has those guys that are pouring into him, where there's some very specific churches that are a part of this network that we've started, for the intentionality of developing him and preparing him so that he would be ready to plant well.
This is the piece that really stuck out to me. I remember serving with the West Virginia Convention of Southern Baptists. And this was really at the beginning of the most recent church planting movement. We had a young man come in, and he connected with a church in his hometown, and that church sent him out as a church planter. And I remember him doing a video, and this was, he was a capable guy, but he was young. And I remember him doing a video, and in the videos, he said something like, this particular area needs a gospel-centered church. There are no gospel-centered churches in this area. And when he said that, he immediately offended everybody from the church that sent him. He said, yeah. I'm thinking, whoa, what's happening?
Yeah.
But this is the piece that I wanted to highlight. I find it intriguing, and I'm so grateful that you as a leader look around and say there are other gospel-centered, faithful preaching churches in our community, mm-hmm. and no pastor has everything nailed. They're not just killing it in all areas, but there are qualities that will benefit this church planter these qualities will benefit him, and their relationship's going to be mutually beneficial.
Yeah, I mean, to be honest with you, I think the Lord humbled me. I think that there was a time in my life where I felt like when we were at Redstone Johnson City, that we were doing it right and no one else was doing it right. And the Lord is pretty quick to bring you and show you that that's not the case. And the more I began to try to connect with other pastors, I mean, I just saw some things in them that I just admired and really began to reach out to them. You know, so part of the way that I spend my time on a regular basis is I stay connected to these pastors. I'm growing from them. I'm learning from them. We're sharing notes together. I've got a Presbyterian elder that's coming in to do some, you know, training with our elders because he's better at this one particular area than we are, and we can learn from him. And it's been fascinating to see how we've been coming together to really love each other and pray for each other. Every Sunday morning, every one of these guys is sending out a text to each other, letting us know that we're praying for you this morning as you're stepping into your congregation. You know, so it is fascinating to see how the Lord has not only humbled me, but how he's connected me to these men. And yes, it's kind of like, you know, the body of Christ in 1 Corinthians. You're seeing these different strengths that each pastor has. You know, I think my thing is probably leadership. I think that that's probably where I'm the strongest. But when I look at the list of the things that we need to give to Adam Stein, there's so many topics that there's so many other pastors that will be able to pour into him much better than I will. Why would we not invite them into that process? So we're attempting it. And right now it's going well.
Jerry, it's exciting just to hear from a leader who's reproducing leaders, also modeling and just kind of integrating into their DNA a humility and appreciation for people around you. Because it's one thing to say they're not our competition,
right?
But it's a different thing to treat people, not just they're not our competition, but also to see their value and how that they can help you and how you grow. So let's talk a little bit about planting Appalachian churches.
The first sending church was Redeemer, sent Redstone Johnson City, sent Redstone Elizabeth. And you know, us pastors got together. And the first time that it took place, they didn't really know what they were doing. They had never planted a church before. So they basically laid hands. They had a service and, you know, they did some equipping and then they sent them on their way. But there wasn't a financial commitment. There really wasn't any specific strategic development, you know, for this group of people before they were sent. It was, and this sounds like it's not fair, but I'm just, you know, being honest. It was like, send you guys and we're going to cross our fingers and, you know, hope for the best. And it worked out. When we were planted, and I mentioned this earlier, but we were planted January before COVID hit. And, you know, just by the grace of God, you know, we were able to make it through that. But a lot of that had to do with, again, going back to the strategy of that we weren't pulling from other churches. If someone came in and was interested in Redstone Elizabethan, I would sit down with them and I would have coffee with them, had coffee with everybody. But I would have coffee with them and say, tell me why you feel called to this church. If they gave an answer other than I feel so specifically called, then we had to say, listen, you need to stay where you're at. And if someone said, we really feel called, we're at this Baptist church right now, but we feel a call there. Okay, then good. You need to take this back to your pastor and you need to sit down with them. And I need to hear their blessing that they see this calling to and that they're sending you well. And when I would do that, usually those people would not come. And we had one family and they did. They went to the pastor, they came. And that was the only family that I could think of that we were pulling from another church. They stayed for a couple of years and then they got convicted because they realized that they had left because they were really upset and they went back to their former church. You know, so the way we were going about doing that, you know, is we weren't pulling from other churches. And looking at that, we were like, okay, what did we do? What adjustments would we make? If we were going to plant another church, what are some specific things that we think that we could give them that would help them to better understand what do we even mean when we say gospel-centered? You know, what does healthy church even mean? We began to define some of those things. And then we began to like ask the question of, man, what would it look like if we were so strategic with this that we gathered some other churches that were like-minded and we made it an initiative that we were going to pour into future church planters and their core team for a minimum of 2 years and then financially support them for the 2 years after that as well. What might we do with that? And then that turned into the organization that we're calling PAC, Planting Appalachian Churches. It's pretty early in its formation.
I love just to hear this leadership evolution. And I just say it that way for the lack of a better term. But this is kind of how leadership works. It'd be wonderful that on the front end, we have everything planned out. We have all of our policies. We have all of our procedures. We have everything in place. But sometimes it just doesn't work that way. Sometimes it gets thrown out there. And like you said, we don't know what we're doing. And we're just trying. We're doing the things that we do know how to do. And then the second generation, it gets purified, it gets cleansed, it gets cleaner, more articulate. And then the third generation, it's even more so. That's exciting because that enables it to be nimble enough to change and grow and adapt to the current situation.
I tell you what I love hearing about is this appreciation and respect for other local churches that I hear coming out of this movement. You know, those conversations with Christian people who are members of other churches to say, you know, we're really glad you're excited about what we're doing, but are you called here? And does your pastor see that? I think that is so healthy, Jerry. And then the fact that you've got, I think you said maybe 13 different pastors who are in some way contributing to the training of a church planner who's going to be in the same region. Think how healthy that is. And I looked at the passage right after the Colossians 4:2, which is Colossians 4:3, and that was a really meaningful verse to me when I was serving in Dallas. Pray to the Lord for us that he would open a door for us or unlock an entry. And so we had some events down in Dallas that were called Unlock because of that verse. How are you seeing God unlock an entry in Appalachia?
You know, I think you touched on it a moment ago. I mean, I think it's almost unheard of that you would see local pastors that have developed such an affinity and a love for one another that they're praying for one another daily and they're praying for their congregations. I mean, let's just start there because we really do sometimes, you know, step into a church or a church plant and we kind of define what success looks like with that. You know, and I've been thinking a lot about you get to the end of John and Peter's being restored and Jesus is telling him like, but here's how you're going to die. And he looks over at John and he's like, well, how about him? And Jesus is like, what's that to you? You just follow me. And I think that there's something liberating when you recognize my only responsibility is to be faithful to be the leader that Jesus has called me to be with this congregation and to shepherd them well and not to be threatened by anything else that's happening in our region, but to recognize Jesus promises that he's going to build the church and the gates of hell will not prevail against it. And that is so much more beyond what's happening within our congregation. So not only how can I understand that and not be threatened by that, but how can I step in and be a catalyst for bringing these guys together? I mean, I did a little bit of this when I was at the school because I was running a classical Christian school and I knew these other school administrators from the region and they were just dying. They were on an island by themselves and they had nobody to talk to. And I kind of forced my way into relationship with them until I finally got them all to get together for a few lunches. And before you knew it, we had a brotherhood. We were coming together on a regular basis and we were doing a conference where all these schools were getting together. But the main thing was these heads of schools that did not even know each other, by the time we were done, they had a network. And anytime that they were struggling with some kind of a board issue or a parenting issue or whatever, man, we got on the phone and we helped each other. And it was just the most beautiful thing. So, of course, you know, you learn from your successes. And when I stepped into, you know, the church in Elizabeth, and I said, well, why can't I do that here? How's this any different? Every one of these pastors is feeling the pressure. A lot of them would love to reach out to somebody, but they don't know how to do that. You know what? I'll force my way in and I'll just go have some coffees and see what Jesus does with that. So I am highly caffeinated now. I've had lots of coffees, you know, but what's happened through that is I have these amazing relationships with these other pastors and I am learning and growing from them. Well, there was one Sunday and I remember one of the pastors, he sent me like the email that went out to his whole congregation. It's like, hey, as we step into worship today, let's be praying for our brothers and sisters at Redstone Church Elizabeth. And these guys are doing great work for the kingdom. And this is a church like right down the road from us. And here they were praying for us on a Sunday morning. Yeah. So let's just start there. I think that that in itself is an indicator that God is at work. You know, this is high priestly prayer. Jesus prays that we would, you know, that we would be one as he and the Father are one. Well, this is an indicator that that prayer is being answered, at least in the Upper East Tennessee.
Well, Jerry, it's as I think about this, there's just so much more I'd love to dig into, but this has kind of been an impromptu overtime recording for our podcast. Really, the last thing I want to point out is, so in Appalachia, we realize that any ground is hard fought. Any one ground is hard fought. When we're trying to advance the gospel in this dark place, it's a hard battle. Not only do we see more now than ever before pastors becoming discouraged and walk away, the average stay of a pastor is less than 4 years now in a church. And in Appalachia, we're going to see that even less because of the difficulty of planting churches and pastoring churches in Appalachia. And because of that difficulty, when a church plant comes in, often the established church pastors see that as a threat. But what you're doing is saying, hey, I recognize you as an asset, not just as an asset. We're grateful for what you're doing. We're fostering relationships, and I want you to pour into this church planter. And that immediately brings buy-in from that established church pastor and thus his church, and also provides a support system for this young church planter. When I say young church planter, he may not be a young man, but he may be young in the ministry. The church is going to be young. And that's going to be another guy who's fighting for ground that's going to be hard fought. And yet he knows that, hey, the pastor down the street, he not only has my back, he's invested in me. And I just think about 3 John. There's going to be a day when that pastor stands before the Lord and gives an account, and he is rewarded for the work that that other pastor down the street has done as well, because he's made that investment.
You know, Adam Stein is the church planter that we're working with right now. And I just take him with me when I would go to meetings and stuff. And I was just introducing him to other pastors. And I'm like, okay, here's what you got to do, man. You got to get to know the people of Hampton. That's the regions you're going to. Go get to know your business owners, but go get to know the pastors as well. Show them that you're not a threat. Establish relationships, you know, with them. So that's one of the things he's doing. And thinking about like how hard it is in Appalachia, when you were talking about, you know, we're in this, what did you call it? The post?
I call it the post-Christian era.
Yeah, okay, the post-Christian era. So when you we did the prospectus when we were starting Redstone Church Elizabethan, and we, you know, discovered that, I don't know, let's say 20 years ago, I don't remember the specific, you know, time frame, but 67% or something like that of people attended church and would call themselves, you know, Christians. And that number had dropped down to the 40s 20 years later. And as we dug in, and this is where we would just sit down with people and we would say, you know, things like, hey, do you think we need another church in this region? You know, why or why not? And then talk to me about your experiences in church, and just to let people talk. And here's a short summation of what we learned. We saw people that were watching their mom and their dad and their grandparents and their neighbors do the church thing. And they saw the inconsistency with the way that they were living their life the rest of the time. And even though they would never vocalize it because it sounds blasphemous, in their hearts, they said, I don't believe this thing. I don't believe it's real. So at some point when they got old enough or the grandparents passed away or whatever, they just quit going and they decided that it wasn't real. This is the territory that we're stepping into. And these guys are closed off and it's hard to communicate with them. And the only way you're going to be able to communicate with them is to meet them on their turf. You got to take time and go fishing. You know, you got to sit down on somebody's front porch. You got to step in and not treat them like that they're your little pet project, but you care for them and you're going to be in their lives and you're going to love on them, whether they come to your church or not. But as you do that, Jesus begins opening up the door and you're able to have honest conversations. And at the end of the day, all of these people, broken as they are and hard as they are in Appalachia, they still need the same thing that we all need, which is communion with your creator and forgiveness of all of your sins and all of that guilt to be gone. And for you to understand the freedom that Christ, you know, gives us and that we can be set free. They long for that. They don't know how to articulate it, but they long for it. And if we will, you know, just step in and meet them where they are at, he'll open up the door for us to have those kinds of conversations. So that, you know, part of like the training is just showing Adam, like, man, I don't know what I'm doing half the time, but why don't you go with me and let's see what happens in this conversation. And he's watching Jesus open up those doors. And now he's doing the same thing himself. It's beautiful.
Jerry, I know we've gone longer than we ever planned to with this, but as I listen, I have a notepad right here in front of me. And here's what I've written down: strategic, purposefully constructed DNA for success.
Amen.
So nobody wants to be a church planter or be a part of a church that's going to fail. That's not glorifying to God. That's a misrepresentation of the gospel. Nobody wants to be a part of that. And yet, when we hear this, what you're doing is purposefully, strategically helping a church planter construct a DNA. We're going to build relationships. We're going to develop leadership. We're going to be intentional about spreading the gospel. We're going to teach the Bible. All of these things, you're constructing a DNA in them. And for a biblical definition of success, I mean, let's just be honest. It's Jesus who builds his church. And so we need to make sure that we're doing the right things that God can bless. Of course, he blesses all of us in spite of ourselves. But these are elements that God absolutely blesses, whether it be a pastor or a church planter.
The other component of that is that we're saying we're going to bless you financially as well. We're going to stay with you. I didn't tell you this story, but here's what happened with Redstone Elizabethan. We had raised in Johnson City over the span of time, because we felt like this is something the Lord was getting us to commit to. We had raised around $100,000 that was going to go to this future church plant. I mean, we were dedicated. We were putting it in the budget, and we let all of our people know, hey, here's what we feel like the Lord's calling us to. Here's where your monies are going to. So we used some of those monies to purchase a trailer for pipe and drape and computer and soundboard and those kinds of things. And then we planted the church, okay? And the goal was that over the course of 2 years, you know, salaries and just other needs would be met. You know what we ended up doing with that other $80,000 that we didn't need? We put it right back into PAC. Jesus provided for us because we were planting the church the way that churches should be planted. We were planting the gospel. People began coming. People began getting saved. You know, people began giving their financial resources, and we never had to use any of those monies. You know, so now we're hoping that the same thing will happen. We're saying we're going to come along beside of you guys and help you financially as well. But if you don't need that, consider putting it back into PAC. And if PAC, and if this investment was something that really, really helped you, would you consider coming and sitting on the board at PAC and being a part of this thing? Because Lord knows you'll have a lot to give, because I'm sure you've learned a lot in this process.
It's unfortunate that competition between churches happens. Is there any reason why two like-minded gospel-centered churches in the same community can't support one another? There's not a good reason for it. And sadly, in many cases, churches sometimes less than a mile apart refuse to become partners for the gospel. If you've seen this in your community, or you're in a church that operates only within its own walls, you can have an opportunity to meet with Pastor Jerry Williams at the Appalachian Ministry Conference, April 22nd and 23rd, at Tri-State Bible College. Pastor Jerry and many others want to help your ministry thrive. Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute exist as a resource, and no matter what need you may have, Rex Howe and Dr. Matt Shamblin want you to reach out to them today. Rex Howe is the president of Tri-State Bible College, and you can contact him by email at rex.howe@tsbc.edu. And you can reach out to Dr. Matt Shamblin at the Appalachian Ministry Institute by email, matt.shamblin@tsbc.edu. The Level Paths Podcast is an outreach of Tri-State Bible College and the Appalachian Ministry Institute.